From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fifth day of April 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz. And a bit later in the program, we'll talk with the chief of the crops branch at USDA. His name is Lance Honig. I called and discussed last week's grain stocks and prospective plantings report with him, and just exactly how those numbers are gathered by USDA NAS and some of the discrepancies that the trade has had with them over the last week or so. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take up what's been going on with the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass will be here from Agrible on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We are now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, to take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks, Todd, for having me. And if anybody wants to get a weekly video complimentary, go to globalanalytics.biz and sign up for that on the free trial. I'm doing a pre-report weekly video update, so it should be about 15 minutes long. Hopefully help somebody out.
That'd be fantastic. So I said globalanalytics.biz because, well, that's kind of the name of the company, Global Analytics Consulting, Commodities and Consulting. But the .biz, some people probably won't be familiar with that. We use .org for willag.org, and then there's .net. There's also a .biz. That's kind of like .com. You just have to know where to go. So globalanalytics.biz to catch up on that video. Why don't you preview, speaking of the reports next week, what you think the world agricultural supply and demand estimates might show after the grain stocks and the prospective plantings report?
Well, certainly today's price action, I think, in light of the fact we did not get any trade deal announcement or imminent trade deal announcement, probably we circled back around to the grain stocks report especially. And I think to a lesser degree, Todd, we probably are circling back around to new South American corn and bean numbers, which have a greater likelihood than they have in the last couple months of actually going up. And that would include the Brazilian soybeans and even the Argentine corn, because they dodged a big bullet of very heavy rainfall right at a critical time period in some of their provinces, and actually came out of the season relatively dry, and that's after having had a very wet spring. So expectations are high for South America, and I think the trade is expecting to see some of those higher expectations. But we were relying heavily upon, you know, some type of trade deal between the United States and China. When we didn't get that, I think on the immediate horizon, I should say, I think that report issue came back into play, and as did continuing notifications and reports of African swine fever in China.
Well, let's delve into both of those a little bit. First, how much do we think of an increase there might be in Brazilian corn stocks, corn production, and then in the soybean production?
Yeah, I think 500,000 tons for Argentine corn is probably what the trade is expecting, and probably right around the same for the Brazilian corn versus USDA's March estimate. For beans, that's a little bit harder to gauge because USDA is already at 116.5, and private estimates have been migrating up towards that level. So we could get an increase. We could stay right where it's at, but I think it's on the table. As for the Argentine soybeans, the USDA was at 55 million metric tons in March. That could go up anywhere from a quarter to 500,000 tons based upon current expectations.
So these are important because global stocks are fed into China and have been for several years now to feed a very, very large hog herd. More than half of the hogs on the planet are in that one nation, though they have lost just a tremendous number of sows. And so their breeding herd is down, and consequently the herd size itself has gone down. What do we know?
Well, and to add to that, we made a brand new record low in the Argentine peso today. So our goods just continue to go up on the export market just by default from the currency markets. I think from the latest since we've last talked in China, Chinese government has pushed back to the provincial leaders control of trying to get this disease under control. This is coming from intelligence inside of China. that I have source material with. The other thing that we did find out through the news wires was that the Chinese government is now forcing processing plants to test for African swine fever. These two things together, I think, make it pretty clear we do not have, they do not have control over this disease at the producer level at this stage of the game. So my estimate of about a 20% loss in the herd for the second, third quarters of this year, it could be a little higher than that. And I'm going to stick with 20% right now until I get some actual hard data back out of some of these intelligent sources, but still a massive amount of hogs.
Yeah. So the important part is that they don't have it under control yet.
Right. Right.
And that means it could continue to build.
Yeah. You could have 20% losses for the next three quarters. Exactly right.
So, and if they did have control, replacement sows and herd would come. It'd take some time, but it wouldn't take horribly long to do that.
No, and this is where the Attaché report this week, I think it was on Monday it came out, was very telling in terms of what they're holding to. The Attaché is saying we're actually going to see imports go up above 91 million tons for the new crop year because the swill feeding will stop. Compound feeding will really take over by the large producers inside China. But you bring up a huge point. When will we start to repopulate? When will we start to use that compound feed? And in the midst of that is, as you said, and rightfully so, a right in the middle of a major harvest, not drought-induced harvest in South America. So the supply-demand report Tuesday, I would say, still bodes the most negative for the soy complex because of these issues. And also, I think there's still a chance that the USDA could increase corn exports because we are still running over 20% ahead on commitments year to date as of this Monday's figures. And so they could, yes, have to raise some of the production numbers probably from the stocks and also maybe raise the feed and residual number. How they do that, I don't know, but they could also balance that with some higher exports. So that's kind of the glimmer of hope that I see potentially happening in Tuesday's report in the corn market.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
You betcha, sir. Thanks, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with globalanalytics.biz. In today's agricultural news, U.S. Deputy Agriculture Secretary Steve Sinske has been telling a Washington, D.C. meeting of the American Coalition for Ethanol that if Mexico actually implements a planned program of adding 10% ethanol to gasoline, it could mean a possible substantial increase in demand for U.S. ethanol.
We have been working for the last number of years with the Mexican government as they are looking to implement an E10 standard within Mexico as well. And we think that that is great. We think that that, the estimates from the Foreign Agriculture Service is that could, you know, result in an additional 1.2 billion gallons of ethanol demand within the Mexican market. And so that can be very significant. And as you all know, we need every gallon that we can get.
Using some simple math, that's about 400 million bushels of corn. That's 1.2 billion gallons of ethanol at approximately 3 gallons per bushel. Steve Sinske, of course, is a deputy secretary at the United States Department of Agriculture. Well, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture has been back in his home state today and was talking a bit about lawmakers and their continuing negotiations on the supplemental disaster bill. Gary Crawford has more from Washington, D.C.
Farmers hit by various natural disasters over the last couple of years are still waiting for Congress to pass a disaster bill that might help them out. At the moment, it's stalled over an issue of special aid for Puerto Rico. A few days ago, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue told reporters in Washington,
"It's time to put politics aside and provide relief."
On Friday, he was at Fort Valley University in Georgia with his cousin, Georgia Senator David Perdue, and reporters asked them about the disaster bill. Senator Perdue's answer,
"We're hot and heavy every night in negotiations, so I'm very hopeful that here in the next very, very short period of time that we'll get some kind of compromise."
Before leaving for Georgia, Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue told reporters in lieu of the disaster bill, of course,
"We're implementing every disaster relief that we have in the current farm bill. That's the livestock indemnity program, the EQIP programs, and the emergency conservation programs, and we're doing that as we speak."
In Washington, Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Republicans and Democrats alike blame each other for the holdup in the disaster relief. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. We know last Friday, the United States Department of Agriculture released the grain stocks and prospective plantings report, and there's been some ire on the part of the trade as it's related to those numbers and the bearish impact it had on the price of corn Friday of last week. Lance Honig is the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. I asked him how those surveys were completed.
Well, you know, there's been a couple of general comments out over the last week or so since the reports came out on Friday. Grain stocks got a lot of attention, obviously a bit of a surprise with some of the numbers there. And I think just it's a good idea, I think, just to remind folks exactly where that information comes from. Obviously, there's two components to the stocks estimates. You've got your on-farm and you've got your off-farm, and they come from separate sources. The on-farm comes directly from the producers. We surveyed about 83,000 farmers, roughly the first 2 weeks of March, but we asked them to report to us the quantity of their grains and oil seeds that were stored on their farms as of March the 1st. So that's the reporting by the producers, what they're holding on their farms at the beginning of the month. And then, of course, the off-farm piece, separate component there. That's, you know, the quantities that are stored at those commercial facilities. And there's about 8,500 of those, and we go to all of them. So it's, you know, nearly a complete census for that component of the stocks. And that's what we report. We report the quantities that were stored as of the first. We do look at the balance sheet. We understand some of the implications of that, but our job is to report what's on hand as of the first of the month, and we base that on those individuals that are holding those stocks, and that's what we did. The second report, obviously, that came out, the prospective planting, some surprises there, too. And again, 83,000 producers, were asking them to tell us what they expect to plant this year. And that's what it is at this point. It's intentions, expectations, whatever word you want to use. It's what farmers were thinking when we interviewed them roughly the first 2 weeks of March. Now, obviously, a lot of things can change between that time and the time they get in the field, maybe even more things this year than some years. And obviously, that's why we go back in June once planting is either complete or nearly complete, and we get an update from them as to what they actually did plant. So, again, those are intentions, and based on what the farmers were thinking when we interviewed them, the numbers that were in the report on Friday are just a reflection of what the farmers were intending.
Lance Honig is the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. I called him last night as he was just about to board a plane in Chicago, heading back for Washington, D.C., to discuss the prospective plantings and grain stocks report released 1 week ago today, as it relates to some conversations you'll hear coming up in the next hour right here, if you can stay with us for our Commodity Week program or on many of these stations over the weekend or at willag.org right now. Speaking of Commodity Week, it's coming up in just a few minutes right here on our home station. Our panelists for the week included Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting. He's out of Waco, Texas. Jim McCormick from McHenry, Illinois and AgMarket.net. And Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Now we're joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agrible and has a look at the weather forecast. Eric, thanks for being with us for the day. What's on tap?
Well, Todd, I think the most important thing that we could be talking about right now is the fact that we need to get everybody outside and enjoying the beautiful weather we're going to have over the next couple of days. Yesterday's rainfall, you know, moved out early this morning. We had some fog early this morning, but that's now pushing off to the east. And what we've got coming in is going to be some really nice conditions here in the middle part of the country, and especially right here in the state of Illinois. 70-degree temperatures for highs. I, for one, am very much looking forward to this. Now, those folks along the southern United States where we're trying to plant a crop right now, we're going to have a lot of severe weather stretching from Texas over the next several days all the way to the East Coast, multiple rounds of strong to severe storms. For us here in Illinois, our next chance at getting some stronger to severe storms will probably come through on Sunday. We're going to watch to our south some strong scattered thunderstorms maybe coming up on Saturday, but more than likely getting here on Sunday. And that is certainly going to put a damper on the end of the weekend with the potential for some strong storms. But I want everyone to get out and enjoy this because of what I've been seeing coming coming up middle and end of next week. So we've been watching the flow of the jet stream. We've had this strong Pacific jet that's really dominated our pattern here as we progressed into this weekend. And it's what's responsible for helping us get these warmer, nicer conditions in the near term. But at the same time, that's been developing, which has knocked out the ridge over Alaska. Well, we've seen a ridge kind of migrate over toward Greenland north of the Hudson Bay. Now, a ridge in that area this time of year allows for frequent troughs to move through the middle part of the country. We have a very vigorous one we're going to be watching next Wednesday. Wednesday into Thursday emerge in the Central Plains. Now, this trough right now has been forecast for the last 4 days to be quite deep, and as a consequence, it is really going to produce a powerful springtime storm system in the middle part of the country. The problem will be there's likely going to be enough cold air on the back of this that's stretching through parts of Nebraska, getting into South Dakota, parts even of Iowa, but Minnesota and Wisconsin, we may have enough cold air to bring in some pretty substantial snow. I know I hate to say that because we had about the same thing happen a year ago in April, although it was about a week later. We had a big spring storm, winter storm that went through the middle part of the country. Well, we're seeing a repeat of that this year. And that following that system, we're going to get a cool down on our temperatures that'll probably last through the middle part of the month. So this cool down won't be as cold as it was April 2018, but it's certainly not going to be the warmth we're going to get to experience this weekend. So I'm kind of bummed about that. When I look out longer term, though, with this pattern we've got going right now, nothing says that it's going to slow down. You know, we right now are technically wetter than we were in 1993 when you look at the October 2018 to middle or beginning of April here, comparing both time periods, but going back to 1993. So 1993 compared to 2019, we're even wetter than we were at that time. Now remember, the major flooding problems we had in 1993 began, really got going in April and lasted through August, where part of the state of Iowa had 150% of its annual rainfall in those 4 to 5 months. So this is something we're concerned about. And just last night, I got the new long-range outlook from the European model. It comes out on the evening of the 4th of every month here, and it keeps the Central Plains wet all the way through June. So that is concerning because that is the headwaters for the Mississippi River. It keeps part of the eastern Corn Belt much closer to average, maybe at times a bit drier. So we're going to find some planting windows as we progress to the end of April and beginning of May. But one place that also keeps very wet and very volatile is the southern part of the United States. So this is shaping up to be a very interesting spring for the U.S. here, and we're going to have to keep a close eye on when those planting windows do open up once we get past the cool down for mid-month to see when we're able to get some field work done. Now, looking in South America, certainly the next 10 to 15 days, we should be seeing the decrease of the strength of the Brazilian monsoon, yet it looks to continue to be wetter than average as we progress through the coming weeks here. So this is going to help that safrinha crop finish well, and the drier conditions in Argentina, just helping them harvest their first crop beans and corn here, so the full season stuff. So that's shaping up to be a positive for much of what's coming out of South America. And just kind of a bigger picture feature I'm watching, we got to be paying close attention to the strength of the current El Nino, so the warmer conditions we have across the Central Pacific. Right now, it's keeping some cooler water off the west coast of the United States, but if I see that cooler water expand south, especially getting off the Baja of California, I'll start to have some major concerns. El Nino seems to be fighting that right now, which means we would tend to, if El Nino hangs on, we'll tend to have a wetter summer. But if those cooler waters do expand and push against the warmer waters coming from the tropics, that could be a signal towards some heat and possibly some drier conditions midsummer. Now, it's all just stuff we're going to have to watch, but I want to keep everybody aware of the things that I'm paying attention to. So it's a very interesting pattern in the near term, and we got some big things to be watching as we spread this forecast out through the rest of spring and early summer.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible, helps us wrap up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find it online at willag.org.